I'm Shersha Mizan from Hudson. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes, when Paris-based jazz trio The Recyclers get a hold of a synthesizer. Plus tracks from Otmar Liebert, Mary Halverson, and Chris Carter. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, arthouse films, live music, and more. Plus, advance notice of close-up conversations with directors and actors and other special events. At the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Socrates, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org/support. That's upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. WGXC local business supporters help us continue to be a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you, Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant.
This is Ginger Radio Hour. I'm Justin. You're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. I'm live in the studio today. And we're going to stay on the subject of waterways, the river, wetlands. And it's appropriate today, a rainy, rainy day here in the Hudson Valley. Part of the reason I want to talk about water today is I had the chance to talk again with the citizen scientist and writer, Layla Phillip. We talked yesterday by Zoom. She's out in Seattle right now, promoting her book and doing research for her next book. Her book, of course, is Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America. I spoke with her in 2023, but the paperback version is out, and that gave me a chance to talk to her more, again, yesterday. And she's got some really interesting new things to say, both about the beaver and the book, but especially about water and something very important that happened last year, which all of you need to know about. So, today on Ginger Radio Hour, music about water and waterways and beavers and rain and rivers. And we'll hear from Layla Phillip in a little bit. Here we go. This is Ginger Radio Hour.
Little blue river, did you hear about all the way from Arkansas? You're the keeper of the complaining. Little blue river, through the night blue river, shining through.
Oh.
Song's about clean water, right? Access to clean drinking water for all. Mariah Carey there the track Thirsty. Before that, Alado Negro with Colores del Mar. Before that, Florist, duet for guitar from their wonderful album, made a couple years ago right here in the Catskills. And we let it off with Michael Hurley, the song Little Blue River. Michael Hurley, of course, is playing at Glen Falls House in April. That show is currently sold out, but I think there's a waiting list. It's presented by Chosen Family, and you should go check out Chosen Family on Instagram or anywhere else. And if you want to see Michael Hurley, I believe it's April 20th, try to get on that waiting list. So, we're playing songs about water, rivers, and being thirsty. Here is Benjamin Clementine. The song is Riverman, which he performed live for the BBC. And after that, we'll hear from Layla Phillip.
She came by on her way, said she had a word to say about things today and falling leaves. Said she hadn't heard the news, hadn't had the time to choose a way to lose. See the river man, gonna tell him all I can about the plan for lilac time. And if he tells me all he knows about the waves river flows and all night shows. Betty says she prayed today for the sky to blow away, or maybe stay. She wasn't sure. When she thought of the summer rain calling for her mind again, she lost the pain.
That was Benjamin Clementine. And now here we are. Layla Philip wrote this incredible book called Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America. And it taught me so much. The paperback version is out now, which is why I got a chance to speak with her again. Layla Philip is from the Hudson Valley. Her family still runs a farm outside Hudson. She's still traveling all over the U.S. talking about the beaver and the importance of the beaver in our ecosystem. I don't know why I said that way. In our ecosystem. The beaver, of course, is a keystone species. I don't have the time to tell you all the wonderful things that are in this book, but it talks exactly about how important the beaver has been to North America for thousands of years, and how important it is, especially now, in America, in order to help us regain some of our waterways and watershed across the U.S., and also prevent things like wildfires. Go read the book. It's at your library. It's now on your paperback bookshelf at your favorite local bookstore. And figure it out for yourself. But I am a beaver believer, and so is Layla Philip. So we spoke yesterday, and I asked her, is the beaver in a better place today than it was when I last spoke to her about 15 months ago? Here's me and Layla Philip talking about the beaver and more.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to say, since Beaverland's been out, I really have been gratified by the immense interest it's received. And, you know, it's joined a number of books out on the shelves now about nature-based solutions that can lead us to a sustainable future, a more sustainable future. And as I write about in the afterword, you know, we're at this interesting, maybe awkward moment in our history where we have really awe-inspiring technologies that we have developed, and they're important and they are going to help us and save us, and they have already helped us, but we haven't learned yet how to live on this planet sustainably. So I think, you know, I give one example because so much of the takeaway of Beaverland and what beavers have to teach us is that the beavers are part of the healthy ecology of a river. So, you know, thinking about rivers for a minute. So like one of those technologies that I, you know, cite in the afterword is that we've dammed up so many of the world's rivers, we've literally changed the length of a day on Earth. And if you think about that, that's just remarkable. So the weight of all this impounded water that we've put in places that it didn't used to be has literally altered the rotation of the planet, right? And so as a result, a day is a few microseconds shorter. I mean, that just blew my mind when I thought about that, the more I thought about that. So in many ways, we need to think urgently about how to live more sustainably, and this, and what beavers can do for us in terms of both repairing the river system and are doing, even without us saying anything, they're just out there doing what they do, but can really help us think about this reset, because beavers in, you know, the thinking of indigenous peoples who have always lived here have been teachers of connectivity and adaptivity, but also, you know, they have been regarded as teachers in a big sense of the word. And, you know, we can talk about that if you want, but so I think it's a really exciting topic. And so the fact that the book has been so well received, it's just tremendously exciting to me, because I think we just are at this interesting moment.
Well, I would, I love teachers, and I love the idea of beavers as teachers. So maybe you could go on about that for a little bit.
Well, I mean, I have to say beavers, you know, just completely changed the way I saw the world, and they really helped me reset my relationship to the natural world. And it's, you know, quite a bit of what I write about throughout the book. I think maybe, you know, I fell in love with beavers themselves. And we talked about that last time I was on your show. You know, beavers really did make America. So they didn't just jumpstart the first economies here through the beaver fur trade. The first, literally the first economies here were beaver pelts, beaver tokens, and that was the first currency. And by the 19th century, the first engines of capitalism get going. Our first multimillionaire, John Jacob Astor, gets his start trading beaver pelts. But they shaped the river systems that would shape the watersheds and the, you know, geology and geography of North America. And all that water, this vast circulatory system of water would lead to the great boreal forests and hardwood forests that and grasslands that would lead to so much animal and, you know, abundance. So, you know, it just cascades up from a beaver pond. And now scientific studies have revealed again and again just the biodiversity explosion that happens from a beaver wetland. So the water has 15 times more plankton and, you know, microbial life, and then 30% more animal and bird species around a beaver altered wetland and pond. And then it just goes out from there. So it's just incredible.
It's really wonderful to just picture the beaver pond and then the impact it has across a region. You mentioned briefly that you had been on the Hudson River. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I mean, I have to say, I mean, you said before, kind of like since the book has come out, I mean, after the book came out, I sort of thought, well, maybe I'm done with beavers, but clearly not, because I've been monitoring a beaver site near my house where beavers have actually done this incredible thing of enabling a section of the river system, which is at that point the stream system, because, you know, you have the trunk of the river that is fed by tributaries, which are streams and creeks, right, that feed into the main trunk. And so in this tributary, they went to a dry area and enabled subsurface water to come back up. And when I looked at the topo maps, it was fascinating to see that the stream had disappeared and the beavers had brought it back up again. And that just really blew my mind. And I thought, I'd seen beavers, you know, go to a stream and dam up running water, but I hadn't seen them do this before. So they basically, what I was watching them do was go to an intermittent stream, which is a part of the stream which might go under for parts of the year, or in this case, for literally years at a time, and kind of pull it up or enable subsurface water to come back up to the surface. So in that way, you know, in Beaverland, I set out to show how beavers are central to the health of the river network and to start thinking about the river network as a circulatory system that pulses water through the continent versus the way we've all been trained to think of rivers as these like kind of ditches of water, channelized water, which is really a degraded river system that's post-colonial. But anyway, so that's been really interesting. And as a result of that, I kind of think of myself now a little bit as a citizen scientist tracking beaver sites. And I have an Instagram. I'm in dialogue with a lot of people who are watching beaver sites. So to go back to the Hudson Valley, where I'm from, I go back and forth to my family's farm. We're still running our family farm that goes back to 1732 outside of Hudson. We're trying to. It's hard. And there's some people were watching where beavers had built a lodge in an inlet right by the Hudson River, right by the railroad tracks. So that was fascinating. They had come down the creek near Cheviot, and they built a lodge just right by the railroad tracks. So really interesting. And the question is, what were they going to eat? And so these people really wanted to support the beavers there, which was wonderful. So I was sort of helping talk to them about how could they support the beavers so that the beavers, A, didn't eat down everybody's trees in the neighborhood, and to talk to neighbors about coexistence strategies. So, you know, if there were trees they wanted to keep, get wire around them, paint them with sand and paint, you know, just be smart about the fact that beavers were going to do what beavers do, which is they're going to need woody material, and get ahead of them if there were trees they wanted to save, but also that those beavers needed food. And so how beavers are doing, I see a lot of sites where people are reaching out to me and saying, you know, I had beavers and they're gone and they're not coming back. And I think they're running out of food in a lot of locations. So I was encouraging these people to get some water lilies going, some cattails, some plants, some fast growing willows, things like that, so that the beavers had a food source. But so, it's really kind of wonderful. I was thinking, well, they just have, they have a good sense of view. They have this beautiful viewscape of the mountains and the river.
They probably have a, like a perfect view of the Wall of Manitou, right? The view from the east to the west, from around Hudson.
And I guess the, what I thought was interesting is that the train tracks didn't seem to bother them. And also, you know, they're clearly swimming out into the Hudson River along the shore. Maybe they're going up and down the river. They can't get a lot of food along most of the banks of the Hudson River because it's been so, you know, banked up with rock and there's not a lot of vegetation. Down in Tivoli Bays, I actually kayaked in there, and there are actually five beautiful beaver lodges down there. And there's beautiful beaver habitat down there. So that's different. That's a kind of inlet where there's a lot of there's a lot of wildlife down there.
And generally, a beaver wouldn't really be in a river as large as the Hudson or the Mississippi River. Maybe they'd be swimming, you know, using it as transport, but they certainly probably, I'm guessing, wouldn't try to find or try to build and live there.
Well, it's interesting, you know, before we had arrived, you know, Euro-Americans had arrived and started to shape the river so much to our own needs, which was for transportation, and dredged it and channelized it as much, the river would have moved more freely back and forth. There would have been more marshy areas on either side. So there would have been more area for beavers to live, and there wouldn't have been train tracks there, right? So I think there would have been more bank burrowing beavers up and down, but certainly they would have been in the marshy areas, not right on a big trunk of a, you know, fast moving river like that. They'd be more in the tributaries, right? You know, the creeks leading in.
So one huge thing has changed, and you write about this in the afterword to the new paperback edition. One huge thing has changed since we last spoke in January of 2023, and that was the Supreme Court decision in May. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I'd like to do a two-pronged question, which is, or maybe you could explain the decision and its impact, and then I'm curious, like, I'd really like you to help, because I love this idea of the citizen scientist. I would be curious to see and hear from you about what people can do in reaction to this decision. And because I want people to feel a bit empowered as well, not just disillusioned.
Yeah, well, you know, I was really, I mean, I have to say it really mobilized me because I was so shocked by it. So basically back in May, the Supreme Court adopted what was really a very narrow standard for deciding which wetlands and waterways of the nation were entitled to protection under the Clean Water Act. And so they basically overruled Congress and science to say that what deserved protection now would only be kind of visible continuous waterways. And this is just a really outrageous decision, because the end of it was to dismantle the Clean Water Act, which was a historic bipartisan legislation that has protected our river system, our clean water, for decades. Because obviously you cannot have clean water in the main trunk of a river if you have pollution up in the tributaries, in the headwaters, because, you know, water, that pollution is going to run down into the main trunk. So the thing about the river system is that, for, if I go back to the example of these two young beavers that I watched restoring this intermittent stream, so the area that they went to and dammed up previous to this Sackett decision would have been protected by the, by federal protection. And it is no longer protected by federal protection because it is not visible, continuous running water. So it just on the map looks dry because the tributaries of the river system go under and come back up all the time in a kind of rhythm. And river scientists know this. People who work in watersheds know this. And so it was, this decision left literally 70% of our river system unprotected by federal protection. And why does this matter? Well, state protections still exist to protect these waterways. So if you live in a state where those protections are strong, those areas could still be protected. But all it takes is for the state legislation to weaken, and then there's no protection. So it's really frightening. And many states rushed to quickly pass laws and say, oh, okay, state legislation cannot overrule federal legislation. Therefore, you can see where they were going. Federal said this, and so the states can't overrule that. Right. So in New York has pretty good laws protecting river systems, but all it would take is chipping away at that and it would be gone. And it's just been very, very damaging. So what's the outcome? The outcome is that it's left it imperative for states and citizens, I think, to really step up and protect their local waters. So, you know, there's a lot that people can do to learn about their local watershed. There's an EPA site where you can find out about the health of your watershed, get involved with your local conservation group, and just be proactive. I think it's going to be incumbent upon citizens to be much more proactive because this is a really serious blow to the protection of our water. And it's right when we are at the same time, so much has happened in our understanding of the need for watershed resiliency to help us in addressing all the problems we're facing with accelerating climate change.
Water is everywhere under our feet. And I think Layla gave us some good advice there. There are so many things that we can do if we want to help protect clean water, wetlands, rivers, and ecosystems. So she mentioned the EPA site. You can do that. But if you're here in the Hudson Valley in the Catskills, check out Riverkeeper. Check out the Catskill Center. These are places that are working hard to protect and preserve the Catskills, which, as we all know, includes lots of water. And some of that water is falling from the sky today. Thank you to Layla Phillip. The book is Beaverland, and it's now out in paperback. So we're gonna do something a little different here for the last 18 minutes of today's show. We're going to listen to Bob Dylan sing Watching the River Flow. And then we're going to put together a whole medley of covers of that same song to take us out. By the way, you've been listening underneath my voice today to a wonderful track from freesound.org. It's by a user named Janru. The title is Creek in Hestehav Woods, March Part 1. And the notes say, early windy morning in March, close to a creek, the microphones mounted as ears on a tree. Anyway, a nice bed under my voice.
What you say? Daylight sneaking through the window, and I'm still in this old night cafe. Walking to and fro beneath the moon, out to where the trucks are rolling slow. Sit down on this bank of sand and watch the river flow. Wish I was back in the city instead of this old bank of sand, with the sun beating down over the chimney tops and the one I love so close at hand. If I had wings and I could fly, I know where I would go. But right now I just sit here so contentedly and watch the river flow. People disagreeing on just about everything, yeah, makes you stop and wonder why. Why, only yesterday I saw somebody on the street who just couldn't help but cry. Oh, but this old river keeps on rolling though, no matter what gets in the way and which way the wind does blow. And as long as it does, I just sit here and watch the river flow.
Okay, so that was Bob Dylan. The producer on that track, I think from 71, 72, was Leon Russell. And here is Leon Russell's cover of Watching the River Flow. This is Ginger Radio Hour.
Mm-hmm. the same. Daylight sneaking through the window, and I'm here in this cafe. Where the trucks are rolling slow. Guess I'll sit right here on this bank of sand and watch the river flow. Wished I was back in the city. Stood out here on this sand. With the sun beating down on a chimney top, while I love so close at hand. Oh, only had wings, I can fly, know where I'll go. But I guess right now I'm just gonna sit here. Watch the river flow. People disagree on just about everything. Makes you stop and wonder why. Why is only yesterday I saw somebody out on the street. Just couldn't help but cry. Old man river keeps running. No matter what gets in the way and which way the windows blow. As long as it's like that, I'm just gonna sit right here and watch the river flow. Watch the river flow.
What for? about everywhere. Yeah, make you stop and all wonder why. Why only yesterday I saw somebody on the street who couldn't help but cry. Well, this salt river keeps on rolling though. No matter what gets in the way, which way the wind does blow. If for right now I just sit here so contently and watch the flow. People disagreeing just about everywhere you look make you wanna stop and read a book.
Much to say. Daylight sneaking through the window, and I'm still in this all-night cafe. Walking to and fro beneath the moon, out to where the trucks are rolling slow. To sit down on this bank of sand and watch the river flow. Back in the city, instead of this old bank of sand, the sun beating down on the chimney tops, the one I love so close at hand. If I had wings, I could fly. Well, I know where I would go, but right now just sit here contentedly and watch the river flow. People disagreeing on just about everything makes you stop and wonder why. Why only yesterday I saw somebody on the street who just couldn't help but cry. Keeps on rolling though, no matter what gets in the way and which way the wind does blow. As long as it does, I'll just sit here and watch the river flow. Really shook.
this old river keeps on rolling though. No matter what gets in the way and which way the wind does blow. As long as it does, I'll just sit here and watch the river flow. I'll watch the river flow. Watching the river flow. Oh, watching the river flow.
Come back to this creek recording on Freesound. Can't get enough of it. There's a whole hour of it. Again, it was recorded and posted by a user named Janru. And as I read more about it here, I'm realizing that this is a creek in Denmark, which is why I cannot pronounce the name of these woods. I'm going to call it the Hestehava Woods, but I'm not sure that's right. You've been listening to Ginger Radio Hour. We closed out the final 20 minutes or so with multiple versions of Bob Dylan's Watching the River Flow. We heard Leon Russell, Jackie Ray Daniels, and Duke Robillard. Thank you for listening. I'll be back in 2 weeks. This is WGXC Acre 90.7 FM. I'm Justin.